Blog Talk Radio.
Churchill's speech, which we will play in its entirety from Friday. The interesting birthdays today. We have Anthony Comstock. He's the guy that started, one of the people that started the goal to end the consumption of alcohol in the United States. That's called the Comstock Rule. So he was against pornography, a lot of the social activities that Americans and people around the world enjoyed, and he was known as, they were known as the Comstock Rules in some places, and it's kind of repressive puritanism. Among the other birthdays today, if you like grapefruits, a lot of the citrus fruits that we have today, and the city is named after him. Luther Burbank was born today, and of course there's Burbank, California. You hear that phrase in wonderful downtown Burbank, Southern California, where Luther Burbank developed all of these fruits, and he was a botanist. Also was a friend of Henry Ford. A lot of those people of that era who were Americans who contributed and did not try to corrupt the community and the country. Also today, a great Czech patriot, the father of Thomas Masaryk, or the other Masaryk, M-A-S-A-R-Z-K, he was born today. And that country came into being after the dissolution of the Austro-Hungarian Empire after the end of World War I. And then, of course, we've seen it cut up first with Hitler in the Sudetenland and the Munich Pact and appeasement, which apparently the world has not learned. We're doing it again. They're appeasing these people who are preparing war, we think. In the already there is an undeclared war against the West and Christian society by these Muslim extremists, and it's nothing new. It's a recycling of what went on when this religion was politicized back around when it started, and they tried to conquer countries under the name of Islam. So it hasn't changed. It's just the time and the methodology. Also today, one of the great French composers of the late 20s and 30s, Maurice Ravel, very dapper man. He's believed to be gay. His most popular piece is Bolero. Great orchestrator. He orchestrated pictures at an exhibition, Mussorgsky's great Russian piece of music. He did a couple of operas. A great musician. And his music is very melodious. It's easy on the ear and easy to understand. Also today, we had great German Jewish actor, Heinz Rühmann. If you've seen the film Ship of Fools, he was the guy with the two daughters who had fought in World War One, and they were on this tramp steamer from Veracruz, Mexico, going to Hamburg. And Lee Marvin was in the film, Vivian Leigh, great film, Elizabeth Ashley, George Segal. And it was about all these characters on the ship who were just before World War II, were just totally out of, not facing reality and seeing the specter of Nazi Germany that was arising in Germany and was getting prepared to inaugurate war against Poland, Russia, and the rest of Western Europe. Great film, and it's based on the book by Catherine Ann Porter. Also today, talking about the Nazis, Reinhard Heydrich. No, sorry, people. Should have disconnected the phone. Sorry about that. The number two man in the SS. Sorry for the distraction. And he was responsible for the all these horrible things that happened in Nazi Germany and in the occupied countries. And when he was assassinated in Czechoslovakia, in Prague, going back to Czechoslovakia, the Himmler took a horrible revenge and wiped out the village of Lidice, shot and burned all the men. The women were transported to concentration camps. The village was totally wiped off the face of the map, and there's just a memorial there today. Also, cities around the world, I think one in Illinois, was set up to honor the memory of Lidice. We're seeing that same problem in Syria today, where this monster, this latter-day Hitler, is trying to wipe out the city, I think it's called Hom. And it's interesting, after World War II, the Nazis who escaped justice at Nuremberg fled to places like Iran, Iraq, Syria, and they taught the local police the methodology that the SS had perfected in Germany. So history comes full circle, and the second time around, Act Two is often worse. Let's see, who else is born today? A great actress, Anna Magnani, post-World War II Italian film actress, black and white films, classic, poignant face. It's her birthday today. And then the photographer of the royal family, a commoner who married Princess Anne, Anthony Armstrong Jones, is born today. An American actor, James Broderick, his son, Matthew Broderick is his son, his birthday. Then the guy who took over the Disney company, Michael Eisner, who funded a lot of these gay lesbian political activities. He's believed to be gay. He was born today. And then another controversy, Faye and Tammy Faye Baker, the wife of the other Baker, and they were involved in a lot of misconduct, financial and sexual escapades. He was born today. Among the deaths today is Aristotle in 322, one of the great saints of the Roman Catholic Church. He died relatively young, in his mid-40s, and he's a big fat guy. St. Thomas Aquinas, so we call it his religious theologian, complicated stuff. Great the English music hall musician, Ivor Novello. Noel Coward worked with him. And then the great Russian cosmonaut, I think the first cosmonaut, Yuri Gagarin, who died today. The great Russian composer, conductor, and the guy who conducted the Russian orchestra when Van Cliburn won the Moscow piano competition in the Eisenhower, I think it was the Eisenhower administration, or the tail end of the Eisenhower administration. They made several recordings of the Tchaikovsky first, both in live in Moscow, and another one was made in the United States, and then the Rachmaninoff second and third piano concertos. And Kirill Kondrashin was a great Russian conductor. And then another Russian who was an emigre, Igor Markevich. He's a composer, and his music is, I don't understand it. Among the issues that the Breitbart's death has raised is, of course, he knew how to throw bombs, and he knew how to get attention. He worked with Huffington Post. But again, because there's so much, and this has been going on, this public corruption, this ripoff of the federal poverty programs, and some of the foundations have been infiltrated, subverted, and hijacked by the Alinskyites. The people who have been working in the trenches who have suffered intimidation, there have been attempts on their life, there have been harassment, they've been maligned in the media by the morons in the media, ignored by some federal authorities who have oversight on these programs. They've been working before Breitbart, during Breitbart, and they're working even after Breitbart. This is not to diminish the work that he tried to do. We will be, since we do this in print, we'll be putting up on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, and it's already up on amicusveritas.org, amicusveritas.org. That's the blog page. But and our YouTube site is the same, amicusveritas at, on YouTube. The documentation of all this theft of the poverty programs were set up, a lot of them, under the Lyndon Johnson administration to help poor people, to give them bootstrap programs. And what's happened, these people have not only ripped off the programs, they ripped off the boots. Winston Churchill's most famous speech, I was trying to edit because it's a lot longer. We only hear the first part from Stettin in the Baltic to the Adriatic. I left out a word. Apparently, he gave a 52-minute speech at Fulton, Missouri this week. Back in 1946, I think it was. So we were editing out the important parts and didn't get to it in time, and we'll try to do that Friday, have it ready then. If you're interested in what wasn't publicized in the media when the Russian sailing ship Pallada was in Victoria, British Columbia, Seattle, Washington, and in San Francisco, I don't know what they did in Hollywood, but some very important things I discovered we were videotaping the sailors in the ship, and then, of course, they had a visit from an Afghan. One thing we found out, that there's a chapel on that ship. It's unusual for communist Russia to have a chapel on their naval ships. I don't know if one was on the Varyag, which was here nearly 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, but we have the video. We'll put it up on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. But what we found interesting, even the brief interview, I don't know if I should have done it, but it was done, and it was only about a minute of the young sailor, and we'll play it again, we came across him, and he was on his BlackBerry. And I was surprised that these things are allowed in Russia, and I was talking to somebody who just emigrated from there, and he said, this is very strange. And he said, well, after Yeltsin came in, Boris Yeltsin, that things started to liberalize, and they saw computers, cell phones, and now laptops. I don't know if this is going to continue under Putin. Incidentally, this, I'm surprised, has been ignored in the media or forgotten. Typically, they don't do their research when they're capable of doing it. The Russian secret police has long wanted to openly rule Russia by the Soviet Union, and this started in particular after Stalin's death, which was also in March of 1953. What had happened was Leventi Beria, B-E-R-I-A, was the head of the NKVD, is what it was called. Prior to that, it was called the Cheka, C-H-E-K-A. And that was founded by a guy who studied to be a priest, a Polish guy named Felix Dzerzhinsky. And he died when Stalin and Lenin were still alive. But it was a brutal police force, and it retained its brutal aspects all throughout Russia up until even into the Brezhnev and Kosygin administrations. But Stalin controlled the Cheka by when they were no longer useful, he would execute the head of the Cheka. And he did that. He would use them to get rid of what his enemies, real or imagined. And then he'd get rid of the people that he used to get rid of his supposed enemies. Well, Leventi Beria thought he was going to take over after Stalin's death, but apparently Khrushchev, Bulganin, Mikoyan, Molotov all plotted against him and made their move first, and he disappeared. We didn't see the NKVD rise again until after the Hungarian Revolution, when they had the head of the Russian ambassador to Hungary, a guy named Yuri Andropov. He was the head of the NKVD and was ostensibly the ambassador to Hungary. He, after Brezhnev's death, he became a head of Russia, their communist czar, in a manner of speaking. But he didn't live that long, and he had Western tastes. He liked fine whiskey, jazz, American jazz, that sort of thing. Very unsocialistic, if you want to look at it that way. And a lot of these people are that way anyway. They talk... talk about the masses and how they're going to lift them up, but yet these people drive their Mercedes, their BMWs, what I call Mercedes Marxists, BMW Bolsheviks, Volvo Saab Socialists, and enjoy their cocaine and all the other vices, pornography and women, and some of them are into young boys and young girls. There's quite a bit of this disgusting pornography and pedophilia that's surfacing in the old Soviet Union and the satellite countries. In fact, I think in Moldavia, they just passed a law that because they've been infiltrated by these Western pedophiles, that they are, if these guys are caught, they're going to be chemically castrated. They asked for it, so this is what's going on with them. But anyway, we now see Putin, who has just won the third presidency of Russia, and some people seem to think that he was not NKVD, but German military intelligence, or Russian military intelligence, I think it's called GRU, whatever it was, he was part of the elite and still is, and we'll see where things are going and whether he survives, because they forced out Boris Yeltsin, who also had an alcoholic problem. And, of course, the NKVD today is called the Russian Federal Security Service. Just changed the name. I don't know if they've changed their behavior. And the Lubyanka, one of the most notorious prisons in history, where if you went to Lubyanka, you were tortured and you didn't come out. You came out as a corpse, if that. But these things are they're all documented, and we don't hear about that today. And people who can get out of Russia to the West are getting out. And I think I'll play that interview again with that young Russian because I was asked about it. So we will, let me see if we can find it here. We have so many. We've got 2,000 interviews and some of the stuff we haven't even played. But where is Plata? Excuse me. So this is, we're going to be exposing and with documentation how the federal property programs have been ripped off. Some of these people are not only double dippers, they are triple dippers. And we will name names and show the documentation to back up what we're saying. But this is what's going on. And these are the 1%, the other 1% that the radical left is not talking about, because of them, some of them are part of this 1% that have ripped off the federal programs. And they've gotten away with it so long, with involving so much, and it's so extensive. And, of course, some media people have gotten condos, and we'll show the condos and the documentation on that and how dirty some of these media people are. Here's that little Russian sailor, this very brief interview.
You're a cadet, huh?
Yes.
Ah. And then what do? You have a choice to go in the Russian Navy or the Army or what? Or go to school, university?
I will be Navy where I canceled my study in Maritime College.
Oh, okay. What, do you go to St. Petersburg then?
Yes, sir.
Oh. Very famous naval base. Yeah, do you know Rimsky-Korsakov, the great Russian composer?
Yes, sir.
He was there. He was the bandmaster. He was on a Russian ship. He composed...
Country, he's popular?
Oh, very much. His music, Scheherazade, all the operas, Mulata. What else? I'm a musician, so I know these things.
Okay.
I had an opportunity to go to Russia, but...
I did have that opportunity, and it was a Cold War, and it didn't work out. The Palata video, part one, is up on the Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. Smiling picture of this young Russian sailor. I hope he goes far. He was certainly very open. And I hope he still has his BlackBerry, too. And he didn't get disciplined by the officers on that ship. Some people were a little uneasy when we were there and interviewing people. And, of course, they had the visit from an Afghan. It was kind of funny. But anyway, we will be back Friday, and there'll be more YouTube stuff going up. That's just a matter of editing, and we had some technical problems with the software. Among the things we're going to be bringing up is the some things you need to know, some of the things you wanted to know, needed to know, but didn't know where to look or who to ask or how to ask about the U.S. Post Office. One of the reasons that the, there's so many problems with the Post Office is, first of all, Nixon made the change to a quasi-government corporation. That was a mistake, we believed. I lived through it. The other thing was, when years ago, when the post, there were two deliveries in the neighborhoods, and there were, I think, three in the business districts, and you worked on Saturday and on Sundays, I mean during Christmas season, there was a lot of overtime, and the post Christmas cards, you left the flap open, and they were like 2 cents, and made a lot of overtime. Also, there was a discipline regarding your dress. You had to be shaved, you had to have your hair combed, no ponytails, no beards. You had to wear fresh shirts. You couldn't smell a BO. You had to wear pressed pants, shine shoes, belt, none of this. And it was a complete uniform. And in those days, they gave you $100 a year for a postal uniform, and you had to apply that money to that uniform and to come in dressed smart. And if you weren't, you were sent home on what they call WAP, or I think it's what they called it. I had worked in the old federal building, and I'm familiar with those procedures because we saw them every day. There was discipline. There were deliveries. If you didn't deliver the mail, you got written up, as they call, pink, kind of a pink slip thing, as I recall. And also, if there was theft, one of the best police forces in the government, postal inspectors, were down on you so fast. And we've seen people that one notorious case was a guy who, on his route, had Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, he'd come in early and do his case and all that, and get his mail out. And it turned out that one day he was at his case, and all of a sudden from here's the story that I got it. Plainclothes men hit him from both ends, hustled him away from his case, and he was gone. Turns out he was taking donations that were mailed to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was going out and spending the money on horses. He was deeply in debt, and also drinking, an alcoholic problem. It's really interesting. But that's how they dealt with it, and what they did was you had to resign immediately or face prosecution. Most people resigned, from what I'm told. So that's how they dealt with it then. There was discipline. You dressed smart, and you did your job, not what's happening today. And the expression going postal, one of the reasons is probably a management problem. So anyway, we will be back Friday, and we'll have that edited Churchill speech. It's 52 minutes long, and that's, you know, it's too much for everybody. So we'll end with our usual theme, and apparently this, some people think that Rick Santorum, he was a lobbyist in Washington either before or after he left the Senate or was voted out, and he has a law degree. I don't know if he ever practiced. But, and of course, a growing number of people are questioning the whole legal occupation. They don't even consider it a profession anymore because of all the theft, the corruption, the pedophilia, the pornography that a growing number of lawyers are involved in. And what else is the other problem with the lawyers? There are just too many of them, and we're over-lawyered. In fact, I did some work for the head of the a section in the California State Bar, and I asked him about this, and he said that there's a 20% or more unemployment rate among lawyers, yet they keep opening more law schools. So anyway, I think it's time maybe we start closing some and get some real people in there. And so we will end with politics and poker. Where are you? And here we go.
you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the plan?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Impulse.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Democrats.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Carrot raise.
Bet him.
Well, I don't know what they're betting on, and I guess they're getting ready to promise patches. Anyway, this is Peter Paul Brizola. We'll be back Friday. Thank you for listening, and this will be up on the World Wide Web. Good night.